it's not going to put my engineers out of business. It's just going to make them work a lot better and more efficiently and allow them to actually spend more time doing the creative engineering side of things.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It's important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. Today we go to Colorado. Have you heard of the Flatiron Silicon? That's where our guest is today. We have a very interesting topic to cover. It's almost out of this world. I'm very pleased to introduce Jim Pollock, JP. JP, as I referred to him, is the co-founder of Lumen Astra, Measuring the Warmth Within. That sounds pretty interesting. Jim, welcome to the Business of AI and Healthcare podcast.
Babalu, I'm excited to be here with you.
I got to start with the name, Lumen Astra. Jim, you're a technology guy. I know a little bit about you, MIT graduate. You've been doing startups and you're in a very fertile area up there in Colorado. If you haven't been to Boulder, you'll know what we're talking about when we say Flatirons, but you've been there quite a while. So tell me, how did Lumen Astra get started and what do you guys do?
Yeah, I started my career after MIT at Hewlett-Packard for a while, then got involved with a startup, a spin-out from Hewlett-Packard, and ever since kind of had the bug for startups. And so this is now my eighth early stage company I've been involved with.
Wow.
Since my HP days, and just got the bug. And I love the concept of going from zero to something a lot more than going from something to something else, is the way I like to put it. And it's just the thrill of doing something that just hadn't been done before and figuring out what it takes to actually make that happen. That's what, to me, that's the most fun, is that part of it. And Lumen Astra came out. I was between gigs looking for the next opportunity. And one thing about doing a startup, it's not, hey, Babalu, let's go grab a beer and figure out our next company. It's a little bit more, it takes a little bit more research, a little more thinking, a little bit more observing out there to find really interesting opportunities. And so what I did was I volunteered with the tech transfer office at the University of Colorado and worked with them. And I was what they call an entrepreneur in residence. So I would work with faculty at the university who had patents, ideas, projects going on to talk about why they were doing the project, why they got a patent.
Was this in the history department?
No, it was actually in the art department. It was in the engineering school. Yeah. At the CU Boulder, actually, the Boulder campus. And so I'd work with faculty to help figure out what their patents did, why they did it, what they thought the use of it is, and what they wanted to do. Did they want to start a company themselves, or did they want to just see this licensed off? And is it even licensable and all? And always I had a selfish eye that if I ran across something really cool, I might want to jump back in myself. And after a couple of years of having a lot of fun doing that, I ran across a terrific professor, Dr. Zoya Popovich, who's a Caltech PhD, and she's run the microwave lab at CU, University of Colorado, for 30 years. And she has graduated, as of last week now, 78 PhD students.
Wow.
And she had an invention that had been just sitting on the shelf for a couple of years that no one had done it. It had turned into a patent back in 2019. This was 2020 when I ran across it. And I looked at the patent. It was for a sensor, kind of like one of our little ones I carry around with me right now. It's a small sensor you can place anywhere in your body, and it measures internal body temperature. So if I put it on a forehead, we can actually isolate and measure brain temperature in real time. And I just thought it's a really cool double E thing in my old wheelhouse, things I used to know and used to remember. And it just sounded like it was kind of interesting. So I went out and did about 25 interviews with physicians and healthcare people that are doing other healthcare companies like Medtronic. There's a lot of Medtronics people here in Boulder area. And out of that, ended up quickly with about 10 different applications that this would apply to. And finding out that there just wasn't anything else like this on the market. And there's a lot of people who really wanted it.
Tell me a little bit more about this. I'm intrigued, of course, from the technology perspective and how AI might be involved in your life in some form or fashion, especially in the healthcare area. But was this device used for measuring temperature inside a person? Or who came up with the invention for what to start with? Was it healthcare related to start with?
To start, it actually originated several years before when during the Afghan war, actually, U.S.-Afghan war, and where we were losing a lot of soldiers to heat stress because you're out in desert climates, you got 135 pounds of equipment on your back, humping it, and they have thousands of casualties a year from heat stress, just overheating. And so DARPA, the defense-related research organization, they went to Berkeley, University of Berkeley, California Berkeley, and also to one of the big semiconductor companies, National Semiconductor. So DARPA went to National Semiconductor in Berkeley and said, we need a device, a wearable device that can actually give us early warning of heat stress. And so they went off and couldn't figure it out. And Zoya knew the guy at Berkeley, the professor at Berkeley, and said, you got any money left? He said, I got about 10,000 left. I'll take it. She took that, took an NSF grant, and she came up. She worked at this microwave lab. She just had some ideas from the side, and she actually came up with a way to actually use what they call a near field radiometer, which is basically the same thing that measures the temperature. It's the same circuit that's used in radio telescopes to measure the temperature of a star. And she applied it to near field, which is just looking instead of 10,000 light years through vacuum, looking through about 4 centimeters of tissue and actually measuring internal temperature. So basically it was a human application that started it. And then once we got started and started doing interviews, we found out that there's actually even a more acute thing we could get to quicker, which is aortic surgery, where you have to deep cool the brain in order to repair your aorta. You have to shut the blood supply off to your brain.
Slow me down just for a second. So you're working with a university that's got really smart people that do all kinds of technology, and they have a device and a circuitry that's used to measure the temperature of stars out in the universe. And you flip that around the other direction to measure internal body temperature 4 centimeters into the head. Do I have that right?
It's exactly right. And it's actually a lot harder. It's harder to go 4 centimeters through all that tissue than it is to go looking at 10,000 light years away to a star. And when we get to it here, that's where a little bit of AI comes in.
So what year is this when you started this?
2020. So it's right at 5 years ago.
Yeah. About 5 years ago. Okay. Let's see. It was in November of 2023 that OpenAI said, hey, look what we've got. Here's ChatGPT. And within a week, they had 1 million people looking at it. And that was in November of 2023. Then you fast forward to 2024, December, just a few months later, you got 4 million people looking at it. Then a few months later, you got 7 or 8 million people looking at it every week. Okay. I don't know when you first heard out about OpenAI and Gen AI and how to use these tools, but did this play at all in your early days of the company?
I've always considered myself, and I think anybody who knows me has considered me an early adopter, fast adopter of new technologies. Although I'm going to say that I've been a little bit on the slower side at first, getting on the AI bandwagon here. But yeah, I was aware of it with those first announcements. And I did a little bit of playing around, just going to ChatGPT and asking a few dumb questions and things like that. So I got started. But where it really came in and we've continued to do that. So we still use AI at that. There's several tiers of how you can get involved with AI. And so one tier of that is just using it as a tool, the ChatGPTs and the Geminis and those other platforms out there, use it as a tool to just help you find answers to very complicated questions in a hurry to access a lot of data. And so we've used it for looking at patents to see if there's anybody else competing with us out there, other companies. We use it right now we're raising money. And so we've used it to investigate, okay, give me a list of all the different venture capital companies and angel groups that have invested successfully in life sciences, deep technologies, and medical devices in our case. I want to find people that match what we're trying to do. And then when I get that list, then we start saying, tell me about what kind of investments has this company made? What kind of investments has this one made? Which of these has made more than half of their investments are? So we just really use it as almost like an expert there to figure out best matches for us.
About when you get down into some of the deeper technology. Now, are you considered to be a deep technology company?
Very much, yeah. The technology we're using right here is extremely difficult. And we know of about five universities and maybe three or four other companies that have tried to do this over the last 20 years, actually, and have never succeeded, which also made us wonder, maybe this is a little bit too tough.
You mentioned the government was interested. Have they gotten behind you at all in terms of helping you out?
Oh, very much. In fact, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for federal funding, because it was such a risky device that there's no way that any angel group or venture capital group would fund us. They would all say, "Why don't you give us a call once you're making measurements? Why don't you give us a call after you do your animal studies? Hey, once you're into FDA, why don't you give us a call?" That's going to be a long time from now. We're a long ways away from that. And we went to the National Science Foundation. And overall, we've now raised $3.3 million in federal funding from
Wow.
the National Science Foundation and from the U.S. Army. And both of them have recognized that what we're doing is very high risk, but it has very high reward if we can pull it off. So they kind of look at the technology and what it possibly could do, and then what kind of team do you have? Do they think we could actually pull it off? And then they've given us a fair bit of money to try to do that. And we're right now getting ready to start the path into the FDA stuff and actually getting a device we can go sell next year. But it took us
Okay.
5 years to get there. I thought it was going to take us 3. It took us 5 years to get there to solve some of the problems.
I would think, JP, that looking at all the myriad of challenges that you have, I'm assuming this is a sensor. It's got all types of RF integrated circuits and technology and all kinds of things that your appetite for utilizing AI, Gen AI, would increase significantly from year to year. I would think, hey, just ask Gen AI, how do you make a device like this that can do the following blah, blah, blah? And it just comes back and gives you the. I asked it the other day how to build an addition to a patio. And it said, take a picture. I took the picture. It said, hey, here's what it'll look like. Oh, by the way, here's the parts. Here's the lumber you need. Oh, by the way, here's where you buy the lumber and here's how much it costs. It all but got the hammer out and did it for me. Is Gen AI a powerful enough tool that can start to assist you as you start to look at the myriad of challenges that you have?
Yeah, it can assist. And I think one thing that AI is very good at is synthesizing from existing information. Because basically, the way they train these models is they go look at tremendous numbers of situations and literature and the information that's out there that has been done, and then tries to synthesize answers to questions you ask about those. And so for that deck, it has seen a lot of people who've designed a lot of decks and bought a lot of parts from a lot of different companies, and it can probably help you do that quite a bit. For us, we're doing some things that are breakthrough, that are brand new. There's still things it can help us with as far as, I'll say, at a component level, looking at some subsections of what we're doing. Because there's techniques out there for doing interference mitigation, because we get a lot of interference from other microwave devices and all. There's devices out there that do that, and we can use AI to help us figure out what other techniques have been used. Are there other papers out there that work on this type of area and whatnot? And they'll find those papers, it'll come back and tell us how these problems have been solved. But can we just sit there and say, hey, design a new sensor that'll measure brain temperature 4 centimeters deep? It's not going to happen, but it will certainly give us a lot of information surrounding that and help. And we use that for that.
I've started to see more and more of this scenario evolve in the healthcare world, especially in the clinical side. I found out there's a clearinghouse for all these AI models. And for example, if you have a abdominal aortic aneurysm, someone's made a model, an AI model for radiology that helps really identify that well, or whether it's a mammography issue where they're looking at breast cancer, they have an AI model for that. And now they're starting to collect just a whole army full of these models and validating them, checking them for biases, checking so you can actually go out and start to find these models and start to work with them. And so healthcare systems now are starting to say, wow, let's use one of these models and let's try it with our data to see if it works. If it works, then we'll adopt it. And if we can identify lung cancer cells at stage one or two, it's very curable. Stage three and four, it's much more difficult. And if this AI model can do a better job, improve the findings from 5% to 35%, boy, we want to do this. Okay. So I'm starting to see this robustness of tools and technology coming out. I would think with the level of quality of engineering talent that you have, the PhDs and the smart people, that they probably are really familiar with AI. and how to use it and where to use it. Do you see that as something that's getting better and better in this journey that you're on to create some deep technology?
So I want to give you two answers here. I want to answer your final question about how we're going to do it and what we see. But before I do that, I want to go back and riff on something you just said that I think is super important. You know, what AI is really powerful about is looking at a tremendous amount of disparate data and finding relationships between all these things. And it can do that better, way better than a human can do it, because there's just so many, potentially millions of variables that they can look at and do comparisons and things of. And just exactly to your point, I was just up at Mayo Clinic up in Minnesota about 2 weeks ago, and one of the groups there, they've got a new product. It's called the Mayo Platform, Mayo Clinic Platform. And what that is, Mayo Clinic, of course, is one of the top hospitals in the world. And they have a tremendous number of physicians up there. And they're Arizona and in Florida. They treat millions of people and they collect data on all those people. So they've got years and years of data on patients. And that could be anywhere from a single surgery that happens and what happened before, during, and after that surgery to people that they've been monitoring for years and years with different conditions. And they know so much data about those people as far as a lot of their history, other things they've had wrong and whatnot going on with them, and what their personal characteristics are. And what they've done is they took on a huge project, spent several million dollars, and they took that entire database of everything they've collected in all these years, anonymized it, which means they take the names out of it. So you can't identify a patient, but so you just have patient number 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 10 million or something. And they've taken that entire database and they now will license that to artificial intelligence companies or other companies using AI to start mining that information and comparing it to new information. So like what you just said is, hey, I've got a big database. I wonder if AI can help me. AI can take your database and then combine that with Mayo Clinic or some others. In fact, they're talking to other clinics like Cleveland Clinic and others to do the same thing. And I personally, there's a lot of different areas where AI is going to be very important. And I think medical and healthcare is probably going to be one of the most important ones where there's benefits to have from it, because the interrelationships, that's why it takes so long to get a drug to market, because they have to test and see how that drug is affecting different people who have all kinds of different backgrounds and different chemistries and different genomes and just the whole different settings, and how that drug interacts with so many different things. And it really takes something like this AI to try to anticipate what these interactions are and eliminate those. It's going to speed up the time it takes to get drugs to market tremendously.
JP, what I'm hearing, it's not like you have this grandiose plan to integrate AI into your product, okay? But you have all these touch points. And if we went to the many dimensions of creating this product, from the regulatory, the FDA, the technology, there's many touch points where AI is a resource for you to help you do better at what you're doing. Without it, I just look at examples day after day where if it can help me be more curious, if it can help me be more productive, if it can help me get answers quicker that are valid answers, I want to use that tool.
Yeah.
So is that the case with you? Is your team always looking, if you found something tomorrow that would help look at brain density and propagation of radio frequencies to the brain, or if you found something that had an AI model that could calibrate things better, are those the type of things that you'd be looking for?
You're very insightful there, Babalu. So there's actually two, in addition to just using AI as a general tool to help us with coding, to help us look for solutions, to help us do marketing, yeah, all the things I've mentioned that almost anybody can use and should use today, there are two ways we're going to interact with it specifically, and they're opposite directions. One is our sensor is providing, in fact, there are 2.1 million procedures in ICU and operating rooms every year in the U.S. alone that require managing brain temperature. There is not a single sensor that measures brain temperature, so it's unknown. So they use bladder temperature instead as a surrogate. So we're going to be able to provide a new signal that no one else has been able to measure, which is brain temperature. So what's going to happen is we're going to help that Mayo Clinic database build up add another dimension of data by being able to monitor brain temperature during all these other things. If there's a cancer, if someone's had a stroke, if someone's had any kind of neural damage, cardio arrest, they don't right now, they can't correlate brain temperature to those things, yet it totally is correlatable. And so we're going to add a new measure to the data that's available. Now, on the other extreme, one of the things we're trying to, the thing that makes us harder to do than measuring the temperature of a star is the fact that we've got to calibrate our sensor through seven layers of tissue to get to the brain. We've got to go through skin, fat, muscle, bone, the meninges layer, and then the actual gray matter. So basically, it's very complicated, and we've spent a lot of time designing our sensors so that it's insensitive to variations, because every single person has a slight different combination of those thicknesses, that thin of fat, muscle, and skin and whatnot there. We've come up with a technique by using machine learning, which is a very important aspect of AI, to where what we've done is we've run simulations of thousands and thousands of combinations of thicknesses of skin, fat, muscle, and bone, because it can be any combination you can imagine and more. So we've run thousands of simulations, and we've come up with one particular measurement that we can make very quickly with our sensor. And then we've correlated that measurement to that whole set of data. And we now, with one little measurement, we can actually do a lookup to know exactly what the tissue stack up is for that person within a few milliseconds. And it's because we've spent hundreds of hours of running simulations and boil that down through machine learning into a nice little lookup table.
How do you make
So,
that unbiased data so that you can look at a head in New Zealand and look at a head in Alaska and one here in Texas or Colorado and know there's no bias issues there?
that's important. And so it basically what we do is we have looked at all kinds of papers to study what are the differences between, for example, ethnic differences in when you look at skin color, porosity, different things, because different cultures, different races will have different characteristics of some of these things that we're trying to measure through. And so we've done a lot of studies on trying to see what those variances are, and then ultimately get it down to where we try to make our simulations just as robust as we possibly can to represent all those. But ultimately, it gets down to we're actually simulating just, again, thousands of combinations that we think that once we actually sit down with a real person, that we'll be able to make a measurement that's completely independent of who they are and figure out what their specific situation is and come back with the tissue stack up that they have.
Extend your journey now to the FDA. Is that a scary trip or is that one you feel comfortable with? And does AI get involved with that at all?
So that's a very complex, interesting question right now, because the FDA is also one, they've got an incredibly tough job already, which is looking at thousands of new drugs and new devices and new things every year and trying to determine, has there been enough testing and are these devices worthy of being released onto the public without severe danger? So it's an incredibly important role that FDA does, and it's one they have a lot of responsibility trying to cover. AI complicates that, because if you have devices that are using AI as part of the decision making, like for example, if our sensor was going through an AI system to tell you what your temperature is, then we're going to have to justify to the FDA what algorithms we're using. Are we independent of any biases and things like that? So we're going to have to justify all of that to the FDA. And the FDA is really struggling with trying to figure out how do they manage that and how do they, because a lot of companies that use AI don't really understand the underpinnings. They get results out of it, but it's hard to determine exactly what path that AI system used to get there. So it's bringing up a lot of complications, and that's a lot of papers going on right now in discussions in the FDA and with industry about how this can be done. And they're starting to figure some things out. Now, in our case, what we're doing is something a little very deliberately, we're trying to do something a little different, which is, again, using AI ahead of time to develop a database that we then use very quickly and easily as a lookup table, so we don't have the same implications, because we can actually demonstrate, once we've built that table, we can go very easily demonstrate that, yes, this measurement correlates to this actual stack. So we can prove it pretty easily.
So, Jim, you remember the days when the internet was first starting to show some green sprouts. And being an early adopter, you were all over it, I'm sure. And you looked at how quickly it really came into the lives of people. And how quickly was like in 3 or 4 years, people are pretty much adopting it. They're saying, yeah, it's probably going to be around a while, but they didn't go all in. This AI thing, it's had such a exponential adoption rate. People are all over it. They're everywhere you go, every industry. There's so many books, so many articles. You look at the voluminous amount of information, solutions, ideas, everything. Your company name is Lumen Astra. I think you ought to put an I on the end of that, Lumen Astra AI, because everybody's trying to label it as being part of the AI thing. Take yourself back to your early days out of MIT, the student culture there. What's the sentiment today? Are the engineers today just all over this thing? If they are, how's that going to impact the acceleration and adoption of this AI technology?
Yeah, my impression is yes. I think engineers are typically pretty inquisitive people. They are a maker of change. That's usually when you go into engineering, one of the things you want to do is you want to change the world. You want to change how people do things, because that's the whole idea. The definition of technology and advancement is when you increase technology, you're making a better way of doing things than in previous. So engineers, I think, are pretty quick adopters of this kind of thing. And I guess I don't look at it so much. There's a lot of technology changes that have occurred over the last couple of hundred years. And there's always been a fear that it's going to displace and put people out of work, and we're going to end up with no jobs left except this new technology, this new ginning machine making fabric out of cotton that's going to put everybody out of business. And what ends up happening is everything shifts. And there is some temporary discomfort that happens on day one. But then over a small period of time, things start to shift. And like I see it as, it's not going to put my company out of business. It's not going to put my engineers out of business. It's just going to make them work a lot better and more efficiently and allow them to actually spend more time doing the creative engineering side of things and using this thing to derive insight to come up with new inventions and whatnot, not just turning it over and saying, okay, we're done. Let this thing do it. So I think it's going to be there's going to be some pain points along the way as always, but ultimately we're going to end up with, I think, a faster, better area. And there'll be setbacks along the way. There's going to be issues that come up. There are issues right now coming up that will cause some problems along the way too.
So I have to ask the question, Jim, the name Lumen Astra, Lumen Astra, Measuring the Warmth Within. I get the Measuring the Warmth Within. So how'd you come up with the name Lumen Astra?
It started a little bit from, I'm an amateur astronomer, so I've loved looking at the stars since I was 12 years old, and pretty soon after that, taking pictures of stars and galaxies and things like that. So it came from an astronomic interest. And I've always said that the reason you start a company, number one reason is to come up with a new logo to work with. And number two is to have a business card with that logo on it. So that's what it's all about, is naming your, coming up with a logo and a name of a company. And then the rest just falls into place after that. So we actually spent some time thinking about it. And where we came up with it was, I think I'd seen that movie, Astra Lumina, something like that, that I think Brad Pitt or somebody was in.
Yeah.
I was actually trying to think of a name for my little observatory where I keep my telescope. And so I started there. And then all of a sudden we just came up, and Lumen Astra basically comes from, it means the light of the stars or a window to the stars. And that's exactly what our technology is we're using the same technology that's used to look at the stars and measure the stars. And wow, it's a perfect little analogy. So that's where we came up with the Lumen Astra name.
That's another dimension. I interviewed an organization that looks at the retina, and they found the retina is one of the safest places to peek inside the human body without being disruptive. You can find out if somebody's got diabetes or other types of issues like that. So what a great story that you've shared with us, Jim, knowing that we're not giving up. We're continuing to just go deeper and deeper, find out more ways that our human body can talk to us. To me, I'm sitting here going, I've got some type of radio frequency inside my body that relates to my body temperature, and you can sense it with the device. You don't have to insert anything, plug anything in. You just stay lying there and we'll find out what your body temperature is.
That's pretty much exactly it. That's exactly right. Well, we all generate an aura around us, literally, and we're measuring that. Yeah.
It's been great talking to Jim Pollack, the CEO and co-founder of Lumen Astra out of Colorado. Thank you, JP. We appreciate your time today.
Babalu, it's been a pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or want to hear from a specific guest, contact us at gopi.com. That's G-O-P-I, gopi.com. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes.